for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The White House is seeking China's help as it considers a response to the first major state-sponsored destructive cyber attack on American soil. Joining me to talk about the hacking of Sony Pictures and what a proportional response by the Obama administration might look like, James Lewis at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Cecilia Kang of The Washington Post, Victor Cha of Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service, and joining us by phone from Austin, Texas, David Sanger of The New York Times. I know you all have your own thoughts, your own ideas. Join us, 800-433-8850. Send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Welcome to all of you. And I'm so glad to see you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks,
Victor Cha. I'm going to start with you. North Korea continues to deny that it had any involvement in this attack. Do we know for sure it was North Korea?
Well, Diane, I think it's pretty certain it was North Korea. I mean, the president said it was North Korea. He must have some authority by which to say things like this. I'll defer to others on the forensics, but if you look at the entire episode, the politics of it, the way the North Koreans have behaved, the statements that they made, it's classic North Korean behavior. On the one hand, threatening to do things, and then when they carry through on the threats, denying that they did them. But then who knows, years later, even months later, they will admit that they did and that they will continue to do cyber attacks. They've done things like this before with regard to their nuclear programs. They've done it with regard to military provocations against the South Koreans. So it, to me, it looks and smells and tastes like North Korea.
Cecilia Kang, walk us through this situation as how it unfolded. Seemed to go from bad to worse to worse.
That's absolutely right. This began 4 weeks ago when the discovery that Sony Pictures Entertainment, their entire network, was hacked in a very widespread hack where so much information that was private and sensitive about employees, about other contractors with Sony, was discovered. And then things did get worse. Emails were released to the public that exposed very, very damaging and embarrassing correspondence that in many ways was just embarrassing, but also could be the grounds for lawsuits because, again, private information was revealed and also data on things like salary. So just things escalated. But until, Diane, just last week, this was really a contained problem for Sony. It was a very embarrassing, humiliating, and potentially financially damaging problem for the company itself. But what happened was when Sony decided to pull the release, the theatrical release of the film for Christmas Day, which is when it was planned to be released, what effectively did is it removed, it made a situation that was contained within a company into a much broader problem for all companies, became a First Amendment issue, raised lots of questions about global cybersecurity. It became a much bigger problem at that point and much worse for Sony, but also one that now involves the U.S. government. It involves geopolitical interests and the U.S. calling for other countries for help. It's become a huge global mess in a way.
And turning to you, David Sanger, federal officials and certainly Mr. Obama have called the cyber attack and cyber vandalism, whereas Senator McCain said over the weekend he called it an act of war. Those are two very, very different statements. How do we come by it?
Well, we come by it, Diane, and I'm sorry I can't be in the studio with you today as usual, but thanks for having me on this remote line. We come by it because there are no established rules right now for how one deals with the short of war problem of cyber actions. Now, cyber vandalism sounds a little bit light for what happened here, because this was, as you said in the introduction, the first state-sponsored destructive attack in the United States, which is to say that while all the focus has been, as Celia pointed out, on the release of the salary information and the nasty, backbiting Hollywood emails where they say nasty things about Angelina Jolie and others, what was interesting from a cyber perspective to it was that the same attack wiped out the Sony computers. In other words, they literally wiped the hard drives clean. We've only seen, in large scale, three major destructive cyber attacks in recent history. The most famous was one we've talked about a lot in your show. It was Stuxnet or Olympic Games, the American and Israeli attack on Iran's nuclear program, which wiped out a number of their nuclear centrifuges. That remains a lot bigger and more sophisticated than what the North Koreans did here. There was an attack on Saudi Aramco, very similar to this one that wiped out the hard drives of about 30,000 computers. And then there was an attack on South Korea, widely believed to have been a North Korean attack, that shares some similarities with this one last year. But this was the first in the U.S. And the problem that the president faces right now is that he needs to establish some deterrence, some way of making it clear that there is a price to pay for doing this kind of thing. And right now, there's been no price to pay. And so when he said he was going to engage in a proportional response, that means that he had to make it clear to the North Koreans that somehow or another this would not be a free and easy attack.
All right. And turning to you, Jim Lewis, talking about that proportional response, what might that look like?
I don't know why anyone's surprised that we know it's the North Koreans. If you've been reading the Snowden stuff, you know the U.S. has really improved its intelligence capabilities. Translating that into a response is going to be difficult, however. There's been five or six attacks like this that the North Koreans have carried out, mainly against South Korea. But there's also been a long set of discussions between the U.S., Russia, China, within the U.N., on what exactly the correct response is, what are the rules are, and there is some agreement. So the U.S. has a policy. It's based on these discussions. And the policy is that an attack that would cost American lives or cause significant economic harm, kind of like Hurricane Katrina, would justify a military response. Sony doesn't reach that threshold. So there's no military option on the table. And one of the reasons why deterrence hasn't worked, we've been trying to deter people in cyberspace for about 8 years now, is that there is no agreement on when you can use military force. There is no agreement that this kind of thing, the erasing of data, justifies the use of military force. So that puts us back into diplomatic action, into economic sanctions, maybe putting the North Koreans back on the terrorism list, making a public fuss. I would have shown the movie On the Mall as a way to irritate them, but there isn't a heck of a lot we can do. That's been the experience in South Korea.
So what you're saying is there is no proportional response available right now.
Yeah, proportional would mean that we would hack a North Korean movie company. I'm not sure that would do us much good. So there's a limited set of options. There's things we can do that will have symbolic value, but we're not going to deter North Korea.
Victor Cha, how do you see it?
Well, just outside of the outskirts of Pyongyang, there's a big, long, white, sprawling complex of white buildings, which is North Korea's film propaganda-making facilities. We know where those are, so that would be a proportional response. But I agree with Jim, it wouldn't have that much of an impact. There's been some talk of a terror list. And I don't, even though there's talk of it, I don't think the president's going to go there. I mean, listening to his words about this on Sunday, I think as David said, he used the word vandalism. He did not use the word terrorism. So it sounds like they're not going to move in that direction. But I think some of these other ideas, like showing it, screening it in the old family theater in the White House or showing it on the mall, might make a nice statement broadly.
But Cecilia Kang, Sony has withdrawn it from theaters because theaters said it would be to risk it, show it.
That's right. Just to remind the listeners, the major theater chains decided last week to pull their premieres or the release of this on Christmas Day because there was a threat, an anonymous threat, by this group that claims responsibility for this called the Guardians of Peace, that they would inflict what they said in their language, a 9/11 type of response. And so the fear then was that there would be some sort of physical damage, a physical threat on these theaters. Whether that was credible or not was not even fully discussed. And one should keep in mind, if you're in the position of the theaters who did decide to pull this, or the company, and your attorneys are telling you you're exposed to massive liability just in case this happens, that's going to be a very influential decision. I mean, the very important thing to remember here is the genie's sort of out of the bottle now. Now that North Korea has so effectively done this, there's much reason for anyone else who wants you to believe that they also could be effective.
Cecilia Kang, she's entertainment and technology reporter at The Washington Post. Short break, right back.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from American University, dedicated to educating wonks to use knowledge to change the world. More at american.edu/wonk. From Lumosity, now with a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. More at lumosity.com. And from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org.
And welcome back. We're talking about North Korea's hacking into Sony and Sony Pictures deciding not to release the film, The Interview. Theaters canceled out on the screening of the comedy. It is about a fictional assassination of Kim Jong-un, which North Korea took great issue with. Here's our first email, Jim Lewis. It's from Sarah. She says, I think capitulating sets a dangerous precedent. What about releasing the film for free on the internet? What do you think?
The precedent needs to be controlled. So I agree it could be a dangerous precedent, but it's something that we can manage because North Korea is kind of unique. They're crazy, they have nuclear weapons, and they don't have an economy. Very hard to hurt these people. But for other people, other countries, the message you want to give them is the U.S. has a really good ability to figure out who is behind these attacks. Don't think you'll get away with it. And that we do have a policy that says we will respond. And if you're not like North Korea, if you have an economy you have to worry about, we will damage you. And that's the message we need to send out to avoid there being a precedent.
David Sanger, what do you think?
Well, I agree completely with Jim that the big concern here is that you don't want to have a precedent set, that there would be no response. But figuring out what that precedent is a little bit difficult. There was a suggestion before, I think, from Victor that, you know, one solution might be show it in, you know, the White House the way the president views movies. But let's face it, there are a lot of people in the U.S. government who are uncomfortable with the idea that Hollywood was making a movie here that featured the fictional assassination of a real live sitting leader, even a dictator. And a few said to me, look, we would have a problem if another country, including North Korea, had made a movie that that imagined the assassination of a sitting American president. And there have been lots of movies that have come out in the past that have dealt with assassinations, but usually it's been with people who are no longer in office. Think of The Day of the Jackal, which was, you know, an imaginary assassination attempt on De Gaulle. But De Gaulle was no longer president of France when that came out. So there's one set of problems. The other question is, do you want to somewhat overreact in order to make a point to the North Koreans? So, for example, do what Victor suggested, take out electronically their movie-making capability, maybe affect the power supplies at Yongbyon, which is the North Korea's main nuclear site. The difficulty there is controlling the escalation when the North Koreans come back and do something perhaps worse in the U.S., and of course, we're a lot more vulnerable than they are. We have a lot more things connected to the Internet.
Victor Cha, what about that idea of escalation? Should the U.S. take any kind of response here?
Yeah, it's a good point. And as David knows well, I mean, we've seen this before with North Korea. In every case, whether they do a conventional military provocation, whether they do a nuclear test, a ballistic missile test, a cyber attack, the question is what the response should always be, because we don't want to escalate the situation. Now, on the kinetic side, in terms of the military things, the response has always been two things, which is heightened exercising, defense and deterrence exercising, or it's been sanctioning through the UN or bilaterally sanctioning the North Koreans. I don't know what the cyber equivalent would be to military exercising. Perhaps it is, as Jim said, you know, you got to show you know where they come from, and you got to show that their objectives are not going to be obtained. We have failed in that case with Sony. But the other is to actually do something different, I think, in the cyber case, which is not to cut them off from information and information technology because of this hack, but to actually try to inject more information into the country to help the people of North Korea. I think the administration can pivot from this problem and move it into the human rights vein, where the UN just last week passed a resolution calling for North Korea to be taken to the ICC for crimes against humanity. And we know the people of North Korea are very interested in learning about the outside world. They're trying to acquire cell phones. They're trying to acquire DVDs, thumb drives, all these sorts of things. So don't cut them off from technology, but actually try to inject more of it into the country.
Cecilia.
Well, I want to go back to one point that David made about sort of the tension between the government and Hollywood. This is on content like this that is sensitive. And this is a perennial issue. This is where the rub of First Amendment rights come in. And this is why many people in Hollywood today, the filmmakers and actors who have responded since Sony decided to pull the film, are reacting so negatively to that response. They feel very fiercely that their ability to create whatever they want and have the First Amendment and free speech rights protecting them is sacred. And even just this morning, you know, people are on Twitter, like Michael Moore, who produced the film Fahrenheit 9/11, and he had said that he was warned and threatened that don't release this film, but he didn't capitulate. And he put up a picture on Twitter of the Hollywood Hills and the iconic Hollywood lettering replaced with the word North Korea, sort of as a symbol of, you know, North Korea has taken, we've let them take over our decision. In this way, this is so. Sony has said it's kind of tried to walk back from its decision to actually cancel the premiere. And it said that we actually really do want the whole world to see this, to Victor's point of letting the whole world see this. We are seeking all these options. But unfortunately, we've talked to all these online distributors and nobody's interested at this point. So Sony at this point says it still wants for this film to be released. As to how it will be released is a big question.
David Sanger, hasn't the New York Times itself also been threatened about stories it's written?
Oh, yeah, we have, and subject to cyber attacks. My colleague David Barboza did phenomenal reporting that ultimately won the Pulitzer Prize about the prime minister or former prime minister of China's family, who had made billions of dollars in businesses that were clearly related to working off of the prime minister's position and name. And a few months later, we discovered that a Chinese hacking group was deeply inside the Times' computer systems, had been rooting around looking for sources. In fact, the company that was brought in to go exercise our system was Mandiant, which is the same company Sony has brought in now to work on their investigation. And it took a long time to work its way out. Now, in the case of the Times, though, there was no destruction of the systems. We were still able to turn out the newspaper. We could still use our computers. The Sony hack has gone a different step, and you have to ask yourself the question, was it the destructive element that made the North Koreans go a little bit too far and may force a U.S. response of some kind?
And what the Chinese were looking for, of course, was who was it that leaked the inside information? They were looking for the reporter's sources.
That's right. And
not the case with Sony. Yeah.
Just to discourage this in the future, my colleagues and I rarely, if ever, put sourcing information in our computer system.
Interesting. And to you, Jim, now, why would we expect that China would help us in this regard, since, in fact, virtually all of North Korea's telecommunications run through Chinese-operated networks?
Diane, one thing to remember, too, is there was a 2006 movie made in the UK called The Assassination of George Bush. And while I'm in favor of being mean to British leftists, even the Bush administration, which was not known for its restraint, didn't do anything bad to them. So there is an unfortunate precedent here. The movie was a bad idea. That's partially why Sony had so much trouble. But the Chinese are in an awkward spot, right? They have been talking with the U.S. You know, it says in the papers that we've suspended talks with them. The formal working group was suspended. Talks have continued, of course, on the margins of other meetings. The Chinese say they want to find ways to cooperate with the U.S. on cybersecurity, not on espionage. They don't, you know, want to talk about espionage, but on military issues, on what they call cyber terrorism, and this would fall into their definition of cyber terrorism. They want to find a way to work with us. At the same time, they have to be nice to their pet. So they're in an awkward spot, right? Do they do something for the Americans? Do they do something for the Chinese? It may take a couple months for this to all play out.
Solomon Choice, Victor.
Yeah, you know, I think we do have a very difficult cyber dialogue with China, and but this may be an opportunity in the case that, you know, they went after Sony, but they could go after a Chinese company for all we know, and I'm sure we're probably telling that to the Chinese. I would also just add another footnote, which was that in February of 2013, the North Koreans actually released a very clunky junior high school type video on YouTube of New York City and a picture of President Obama going up in flames. So Seth Rogen and those guys may not have started this. It was the North Koreans actually started this.
On the other hand, I think we should not forget that Kim Jong-un is considered a semi-religious figure within North Korea that does, from their perspective, perhaps create a difference?
No, I'm sure that the plot line, the storyline of this movie and the satirical element of it clearly hit a nerve in North Korea. The way they reacted to this was not the way they've reacted to other films in the past in which North Korea has been portrayed as the bad guy. It clearly hit a nerve. And I think that also reflects the fact that the leadership is a bit insecure about how their public feels about this so-called godlike leader.
Now, Cecilia, what about other major companies? North Korea now knows it can have an effect on something like Sony. Do you think it will go after others?
In some ways, Diane, this was probably the best designed or engineered hack, you could argue, in the sense that it fit into this nexus of attention-grabbing celebrity gossip that got the media's attention, that also got the public's attention. Let's keep in mind, 90-plus percent of Fortune 500 companies are hacked. They just have been. But they don't get the attention. If you were the maker of tissue paper and notebooks, you wouldn't get this kind of attention that Sony Pictures did, because that company that produces the tissue paper won't have emails about Angelina Jolie and the Steve Jobs biopic and talk about Kevin Hart. These are people that the whole, not just the U.S., but in people in the U.S., but around the world, people who we're interested in. And we like to see the gossip. There's a little bit of schadenfreude when you see executives say things that are horribly embarrassing and even very racially insensitive. These kinds of things, to watch this kind of implosion of Sony, was very much in the media's making. And so from the hackers' perspective, it was very interesting that as they released data, the data that was released was the kind of stuff that they knew that the media would glom onto, and that also that would grab global attention. And there were legitimate reasons to follow this case. IP secrets were leaked. This company, as a business story, is now subject to at least four class action lawsuits as we speak. The company itself has a lot of issues about that were raised about pay disparity. So lots of things that have come to the attention of the general public about this company as a business story and seeing this implosion.
Cecilia Kang of the Washington Post, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Jim, the question is still, could this have been an inside job?
Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah, it is very consistent with what the North Koreans have done previously in South Korea. It fits the pattern exactly. What people are confused about is they seem to have so much inside knowledge about the company. They seem to do such a good job. Maybe there was an insider. You can't rule that out. It's hard to get insiders. It's not that easy. But the North Koreans are known for being meticulous in their preparations on these kinds of targets. They probably started planning this several months before it happened. Remember, they sent a letter to the UN Secretary General calling the film an act of terrorism and demanding that it be stopped in July. And when they didn't get the answer they wanted, that's probably when they started thinking about what would hurt. They stumbled into a gold mine. I'm sure they didn't expect to find emails criticizing the president or putting up the pay disparity, but they were smart enough to exploit it when they got there.
David Sanger, any possibility of an inside job?
Well, you have to have the suspicion, only because the question is, how could a bunch of people sitting around a conference room in Pyongyang know that the way that you drive Hollywood executives up the wall is to publish their inflated salaries for sitting around having long lunches at the Beverly Hills Hotel? And, it's not something you would initially think that they would know about. So my guess, and it's pure guesswork, is that by the time we learn more, and we may not learn more for months or years, we may find that they had some outside advice and help. But it may not have been an insider. It may have been an American-savvy Chinese, North Korean who's been out and around, South Korean who was helping them, perhaps unknowingly, some kind of hired help.
All right, and Cecilia, what I wonder is whether this could create self-censorship in Hollywood especially.
We are already seeing some signs of that. New Regency and Fox actually canceled their production of a movie called Pyongyang that would, that's the capital of North Korea, and it has to do with North Korea, obviously, and starring Steve Carell. Paramount Pictures canceled the showing of a film that's already been released called Team America in some theaters on Christmas Day. A few theaters had actually planned to release the film in place of The Interview, sort of as a sign, sort of as a, stand of courage against, you know, this decision.
What
North Korea.
Is that movie about?
Team America is it's also a comedic kind of, it's sort of the, it's a playoff of the axis of evil, all these, the nations that are, the nation rogue states that are, and the leaders that run it, and it's, I think it's an animated film. And
Marionettes,
I should say.
2004.
Yeah. 2004.
But it makes fun of everybody.
But it makes fun of everybody equally. And Paramount, the producers of that film, asked that those screenings be canceled as well. So you're already seeing the ripple effect of it, the self-censoring, if you will.
So I imagine at that table in Pyongyang that David Tseng was just describing, the North Koreans are sitting around there popping champagne corks, because I don't think they ever imagined that it would have the effect that it's having. I think that what Cecilia describes is correct, but I think it's just an initial knee-jerk reaction. And that we may see more moderated behavior going forward.
Victor Cha, professor of Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service. Short break here. When we come back, your calls, your email. I look forward to speaking with you.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Pajamagram Company, offering hoodie footy PJs, footed pajamas for warmth and personal style, in solids, holiday prints, and a new cuddle puff down. More at pajamagram.com. From the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And from the estate of Joan Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a new history of cotton from a global perspective, how the plant's cultivation and a reliance on slave labor ushered in modern capitalism and laid the groundwork for today's economic inequality. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back as we talk about the fallout from the cancellation of the showing at theaters around the country of the controversial film, The Interview, which is about the assassination of North Korea's young leader, Kim Jong-un. Here is an email from Corey in Farmington, Michigan, who says, I'm a theater exhibit. I own 22 movie screens. Last week, the major exhibitors participated in a conference call and offered Sony the idea of a limited release of their film in select freestanding theaters throughout the country. They made the choice not to pursue this option and have blamed lack of distribution on the theater owners. This is completely untruthful. What do you think of that, Cecilia?
That's a fascinating email, Diane, because Sony has indeed blamed the theater owners, the major theater chains, sort of raising its hand saying, what can we do? If the theaters don't want to run the film, what can we do? So we have chosen, Sony said, to cancel our release of the film on the premiere date, and we'll figure out an option because we really do want this film to get out at some point. So if you're an independent theater and you want to release a film, you can't, because Sony at this point is canceling any distribution until they figure out a way. It could be online. It could be what have you. I mean, now that we go through the Christmas holiday season and it's just, you know, time goes by, the public will generally forget this, you know, and this might be a problem that's good for Sony that in that it goes away. This is why the president last week, and I've never heard the president single out a private company like this and say, you made a mistake. And you made a mistake for these reasons. You created a bigger problem with censorship and with cybersecurity. This is the problem that Sony faces in that its decision to pull, because it was under so much pressure with public relations, it was so embarrassed. Its executives were being raked over the coals to submit to this kind of pressure and then to blame the theaters. In a way, it's added another problem, yet another problem that has hurt its relationships.
And let me offer another email, and we've had many like this. It's from Susan in Bethesda, Maryland, who says, while we must support First Amendment protections, don't the film's writers and producers deserve some approbation for all that's resulted from their decision to use Kim Jong-un's actual name rather than to simply use a fictional character? Isn't this waving a red flag in front of a mad bull? Except it now seems the crowd is also standing unprotected in the bull ring. Victor Chaw.
Yeah, well, an eloquently framed question for sure. Yes, I mean, this is the first film that I can think of in which North Korea depicted as the bad guy. They use the actual names. There have been several, actually, recently that have put North Korea in that adversarial role but have not directly used the names of the individuals. The one that comes closest is Team America, and there the North Korean reaction was, because as Jim said, they didn't have the capabilities, and they did demarche several Eastern European governments to ask them not to allow the film to be shown in that country. That was about all that they could do. But again, it's, you know, it's theater, it's art, it's free expression. So whether the writers should be blamed for something like this, for sparking an international crisis, I just don't know.
Jim.
But remember.
Hold on, David.
Remember that, you know, Hollywood's looking for cost-free bad guys. So you see jihadis, Nazis, and North Korea. The movie Red Dawn, when it was remade, it was made originally with the Chinese invading the U.S., and then somebody realized, uh-oh, that'll cost us the China market. So they switched them to North Koreans. Hollywood's going to have to find a new bad guy now because they thought it was cost-free to do North Korea.
David.
Two quick points on this, Diane. First of all, our Hollywood reporters for the Times reported that some of the cast, when they were initially being cast for the making of this movie, were told at the beginning that it would be, in fact, a fictional North Korean leader. I'm not sure that would have made that big a difference here, but probably would have made some. And when they showed up at the set, they discovered the script had been changed, that some early scripts may have had it that way, but it ended up with what it was. One other thing about the free distribution of this movie. Sony has made the case, you know, it couldn't find anybody to distribute it in the theaters, and of course, there was great reluctance by, you know, the Netflix and this and that of the world. Well, Sony happens to own a streaming video service. It's called Crackle, and it's completely owned by Sony. So if Sony really wanted to release this for free, it could do it in its own system. It doesn't need to go to other distributors, and everybody could go download it, or they could do it for a fee, whatever they wanted. They have the capability themselves to do this.
All right. Let's go back to the phones to Estella in South Bend, Indiana. Hello.
Hi. Yes, I love your program, And I just wanted to ask your guest, why would Sony be surprised at the reaction by the North Koreans? They're pretty radicalized anyway, and seems to me that they will do anything to capture or diffuse a situation to make themselves look bigger or better. And the other question I have, what about Sony's accountability and professional etiquette? We can't say any and everything about issues that we disagree with people on. You know, we have to exercise caution and good judgment. And I think a lot of the movie theaters today do not take what's really happening in the real world seriously.
All right. Thanks for your call, Jim.
So the emails showed an amazing degree of hubris on the part of the Sony executives. They probably thought they could get away with this. It's never occurred to them that they would be penalized for this. And it's fair to go back and say, you know, they should have thought a little more carefully about it, but they've never thought that way before. And a good task for people is, especially if you're an executive at the Sony level, is ask yourself how you'd feel if your email appeared on the front page of the New York Times.
Exactly. Yeah. Victor Cha.
Well, on this question of what, you know, the North Korean reaction, why did they expect it? You know, every reaction is in a context. And so the hypothetical that I would put out, or the counterfactual, would be, you know, if this movie had come out as it had done, and North Korea in the prior 2 months had not been under severe international pressure because of the UN actions on their human rights problems for the first time in the history of the organization, North Korea might have been less hypersensitive to this sort of movie coming out than they actually were. We talked about how this really hit a nerve, Diane, for the North Koreans. The thing that immediately preceded this was the Third Committee of the UN General Assembly, and then the UN General Assembly actually passing a resolution about the crimes against humanity, and that really hit a nerve in North Korea as well. So it might have been the sequence of things that led to this.
All right, to Bill in Norfolk, Virginia. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think what differentiates this movie is the fact that they mention a specific individual by name, and that is the onus for the movie. All the other movies you're discussing, Red Dawn, any of the other ones, they have something to do with a potential conflict. They have nothing to do with killing a deified individual in this country. I believe that this response should have been expected by competent people. But then again, you know, we've got executives not doing what they're paid to do, which is to think. And I believe Sony is responsible for this. And in terms of the president or John McCain trying to escalate this into something that could involve U.S. troops dying, I believe that is absolutely insane. Okay, this is Sony's fault, and they reaped what they sowed.
All right. Thanks for your call, Jim.
Yeah, it's not worth starting a second Korean War over the movie. This wasn't an act of war. It wasn't the first cyber war. America did not lose it. It was indeed a crime, maybe vandalism, but it doesn't justify starting a bigger mess.
David Sanger, I wonder, there are lots of people who are asking why the U.S. government wasn't better prepared to somehow intervene here, and whether this is going to mean a total escalation of our capacity in terms of being able to intercept or ward off these kinds of attacks.
Well, Diane, I've been asking that question a lot as well. And in one respect, the U.S. has been better prepared, both because President Obama tried to encourage a fair bit of cyber preparedness, but most of the targets are in the private sector. The government doesn't control them. And I think, secondly, because there has been this great focus that the real cyber attack on the U.S. would come on the power grid, on the cell phone network, on emergency services, something that strikes at our infrastructure. And so when Sony was first hit, I think that there were many in the Obama administration who were putting this in the category of other cyber incidents of the past year, Home Depot, Target, even the invasion of JPMorgan Chase, or the unclassified White House and State Department systems, which people suspect a Russian group got into in the fall. And I think they woke up very late to the fact that this was destructive in nature. And so they scrambled last week. But it tells you that their own system of sort of briefing up what's important and what's routine is not very well developed right now.
Cecilia.
And what differentiates this from those other cyber attacks that David mentioned is it wasn't credit cards that were stolen or passwords or that kind of information that has a real customer effect on companies like Home Depot and Bank of America. It was using data really as ransom, as hostage. Don't do X or else we will release more data that we have hacked. And that was a new fold. That was a new thing. And that's sort of the precedent that a lot of people are talking about.
So remember in 2013, 10 companies a day were hacked that we know about and were notified by the FBI. So this is a routine occurrence. If you were going to be critical, you could say that our approach has been a little too ad hoc, a little too voluntary. We don't know what companies are doing, and Sony would just be one of them. So an important step would be for people to take a step back, people in the C-suite, on the boards, and say, have we underestimated the risk of a cyber attack?
Do you think we have?
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't get a lot of attention. And so in some ways, you know, we owe most of the progress we've made in the last 4 years in cybersecurity to Iran and North Korea. So we owe them a vote of thanks, because when the Iranians hacked the banks in 2012, it was really a wake-up call. Now this is another wake-up call. So people are taking new looks at what we need to do to protect ourselves as a nation. A very difficult field. The rules are not clear in general. The reluctance to impose a regulatory approach makes sense. But we're going to have to do something different.
James Lewis, he's with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And now to Mike in Clearwater, Florida. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. I love your show, and thank you for putting me on. I've heard all different types of suggestions and escalation and retaliation. And one, I wanted to call because there's one idea that nobody's come up with, and it doesn't forgive the North Koreans for what they did. But how much would it diffuse if the head of Sony apologized to North Korea for this distasteful act against their holy leader? And that's the comment I wanted to make, and I'll listen to the answer on the radio, and I thank you very much.
Thank you. Victor Cha.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting idea. On the other hand, it's all about precedent, and we know that even though this may have been offensive to North Korea, North Korea is not exactly a good regime in the world. In fact, it's one of the worst rule breakers of any regimes in modern history. So while it may have been offensive to them, apologizing to them may not solve the problem. It may just incentivize even more behavior like this. I mean, now that Sony's pulled the picture, we have to remember that the country we're dealing with here is North Korea. So what's to say they're not going to continue to release data, even though the picture's been pulled? So, you know, I think it's a nice sort of friendly idea, but with North Korea, our relationship has never been friendly.
David, now that North Korea seems to have had such a success with this cyber attack, do you expect more?
I do, and I do with Iran as well. And this goes back to something that we've talked about before on your show, which is what's the utility of developing a nuclear program? So, you know, North Korea now has done 3 nuclear tests and may be headed to a fourth, but they know they can't use a nuclear weapon because you use a nuclear weapon and 60 minutes later your regime is ended and your country is smoking. But that's because nuclear weapons are on an on-off switch. Cyber weapons, on the other hand, are on a rheostat. You can turn them up and down the way you would turn up and down the heat in your home. In this case, they may have turned it up 1 or 2 degrees too high when they got to the destructive element of it. But I think the lesson they have learned from this is, hey, we have a weapon that's not governed by any treaties, that people don't know how to respond to, and that we can actually use. And other countries have come to that conclusion. As Jim mentioned before, there are several attacks attributable to Iran, Saudi Arabia certainly was one. There have been some in the United States. And the Iranians know as well that if they ever actually developed a nuclear weapon, the subject of many negotiations right now with Iran, it would not be usable. So that's why the short-of-war options of using a cyber weapon are so attractive.
David Sanger, he is with the New York Times, author of Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. Victor Cha of Georgetown University, he's author of The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future. Cecilia Kang of The Washington Post, James Lewis of the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Thank you all so much for a very interesting program.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you. Thanks, Diane.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Denise Couture, Susan Casey, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Danielle Knight, Allison Brody, and Alexandra Boti. The engineer is Timothy Olmsted. Natalie Urblifker answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington, D.C.